in verse 17. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, when women are polluted, the populace is Varna Shankara. And when the Varna Shankara population increases, the situation in the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, all the Vedic literatures strongly warn against creating Varna Shankara. When there's Varna Shankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and similar bodies. So, the idea is that what is the problem with Varna Shankara? Varna Shankara means the conception has been created because of sense gratification. And so then the difficulty comes there, is that means the child is only interested in sense gratification. So there's no potential for controlling the senses, controlling one's direction, regulating one's life. And because of that lack of regulation, then you can't actually make a prosperous society. Right? Because that's the whole point of Dharma, is that you have the universal laws, and then an individual's fitting into that. So that means there must be some restriction. There must be a goal, right? There must be a restriction, and there must be, you know, proper action and applied. And then from proper action, you get proper results. No proper action, no proper results, right? No action, you get nothing, right? So there has to be action. But that ultimate goal has to be something that's uplifting to human life. So that means then the creation of the children have to be created on that basis, right? They're created according to samskar. Then the child will be interested in purification, because the idea of samskar is that there's purification, there's upliftment. So if there's no samskar, then the goal is sense gratification. Right? And that's not progressive, that's going backwards, because anamoya is the lowest level of consciousness. So even though you may have a developed society, as Prabhupada mentions, great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and other similar bodies, he's mentioned great because we're not just talking about a few people sitting in a room. We're talking about something big, organized, very great. Effort has been made, but from that, the direction that it's going is not forward into Dharma and forward into, you know, self-realization. It's going backwards into sense gratification. So then that's the problem, is you can't create peace and prosperity. Right, because peace there must be a stability, and prosperity there must be proper action. Right, no prosperity comes from improper action, and no peace can be there unless there's the proper understanding of who you are, what's the situation. Does this make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole problem with Varna Shankara. Right, because then the basis of what you're working with, right, just like if I want to cook vegetable preparation, I have to have vegetables. If I have rocks, it's not going to end up as vegetables. I can make it a nice sauce, but I won't get vegetables. You understand? So if you don't have a population that, because peace and prosperity means forward, right? Peace is going to come because of understanding who you are, right? Both on the material platform and on the spiritual platform and devotional platform. When that's all there, then you get peace, right? And prosperity comes from proper performance of your duties, right? So it says, it's a simple point. So pranamoy can't give it, and anamoy definitely is not going to give it, right? Animals are not peaceful. You watch animals, they're never peaceful. They're always afraid, because, and they're situated on the platform of sense gratification. Right? And prosperous means how prosperous are they? Right? The only ones you think of maybe as prosperous are maybe bees or ants. They go out, collectively. So there's a little pranamoy there. So there's something forward. But otherwise, it's everything is basically, we can't say hand to mouth. You'd have to say, you know, hoof to mouth or paw to mouth or, you know, whatever it is that they have, you know? So does that make sense? So that's why then Varna Shankara is worried about. Because people nowadays, it's just, I feel like it, or it's a, you know, enjoyment, or it's happiness, or it's quote-unquote love, or like this. And so that's the greatness of it. But then after that moment of greatness, then what? Then you have another 50, 60, 80 years of insanity. Right? So that's why the Vedic system senses for progress. The material world's meant for progress. We have to understand what the universal laws are and work back from there. Difficulty is if we work on that, no, it's all about me and what I feel like, then that's it. So does that make sense? So that's the interesting thing. Just like, let's say, if you ever, someone asks you why you're doing something that is traditional or Vedic or devotional, you can explain it scientifically, they'll argue like anything. But as soon as you say, well, I like it like this, I prefer like this, this is what I like to do, then it's kind of like, oh, okay. You know, that's it. So that's the easiest way to present Krishna consciousness to people. They ask, how can you guys wear mud on your forehead? I like mud on my forehead. You don't like mud on your forehead? Come on, get with it. Everybody's got mud on their forehead. So then it's just, they don't have anything to say because that's authority. Science is up for discussion. Emotions, that's just it. That's authority. So that's the point. So because of that, then it's everybody's feeling. And then how do you make a cooperation? Now and again, something will pull together and there'll be some kind of thing. People will unite because they have a common feeling. And then they feel good because there's that cooperation and everything like that. But they don't understand is that because the point to get together is not so progressive. It's because of their feeling. It's not because it's something to be done. Let's say, okay, let's say there's a disaster somewhere, okay? And then there's a big move to help those people, right? There's a tsunami somewhere and they're making some fundraising. So people feel good because there's a feeling and they're all working together for that feeling, right? Or a political, you know, campaign, everybody's working together. So that unity and that they feel good, that the basis is not because this is what I should do. I have money, I have silly, I should give in charity. It's no, I feel like that this is good, it makes me feel good, that's why I'm doing it. You understand? So even though they're doing a higher principle, the basis of it is lower. Right? Because here, the activity of charity or the activity of the politics, as we were discussing yesterday, is kritatva. Right? Means it's a secondary thing. What's the primary? Their own happiness based on their emotions. It's not purushartha that it's something of a higher principle. I'm following dharma, or this is, you know, the nature of the soul, or this is bhakti. You understand? So that's where the qualification of the individual comes in. That's where the adhikar is that what's their suitability for this? So the suitability is based on what's the mentality, what's the mood, the proper attitude, and the nature to back it up. Right, that they have the proper nature, they have the proper maturity, right? Just like, let's say, for example, you doing something, and everybody would like to take part. So before it was, you know, the senior personalities, they would do these things, right? And everybody would watch and take part. Now it's kind of like, well, unless I do it myself, I don't get the mercy. Right? Before it was, you got the mercy just by being there. Now it's you got to get the mercy. If you don't do it yourself, you don't get it. Right? So then everybody gets involved, and then the whole flavor, the whole environment of the festival gets lost. So why does it get lost? Because people taking part in the festival like that is not a problem. But what is it? The maturity is not there. They're devotees, but they don't have the maturity. Therefore, when they get involved in it, it's about them doing the thing. I'm getting the mercy. It's not about the deeds. It's not about the community of Vaishnavas. It's just about I'm getting the mercy. You understand? So the maturity is not there. Though they have the nature, they're a devotee. Right? Does that make sense? So, and then the suitability, because of that, is not very great. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. So that's not a solution to okay, somebody is there, mature, that, and they become proud of their position. So the solution's not, now you get a bunch of, instead of one big proud person, you get, you know, 100 small proud people. That doesn't solve the problem. You have to move everything forward into Krishna consciousness, right? Is that understand? So in other words, the purusharta has to be clear. Because the point is there's a difference between me getting the mercy and pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? They're connected. But there's a difference between pure devotional service and mixed devotional service. Pure devotional service, I'm, let's say, bathing the deity to please Krishna. Right? I'm his servant, so I've come to please him by bathing him. Right? Mixed devotional service is I'm getting the mercy. Do you understand? This may be a totally new concept. But there's a purport in the third canto of Prabhupada explaining the difference between pure devotional service and mixed devotional service. Okay, you ready? Mixed devotional service is I want to, you know, serve Krishna, go back to Godhead, and live eternally in the spiritual world. Pure devotional service, I just want to please Krishna. The result of pure devotional service is you go back to Godhead, you live there eternally, and you'll be happy. But that's an effect. It's not a goal. The goal is simply Krishna's pleasure. Does that make sense? So in other words, when the purusharta is main, then you get pure devotional service. When the kritattva is main, then that's when it's mixed. Because it's about me, eternal life, because this temporary life's annoying. I want to be happy because here it's miserable. You know what I'm saying? I want to be in the spiritual world because it's a whole heck of a lot better than around here. Does that make sense? So, yeah, you can put it there. It's his problem. Does that make sense? So, much of the time we're taking mixed devotional service as the topmost. No, mixed devotional service is what we're doing because you have to be inspired, right? There has to be goals. But you have to see, you're trying to develop that your goal is pushed farther and farther until the goal is serving the Lord for His pleasure in prema. And all other considerations aren't important. Where I'm situated, what I'm doing, this and that, something. It's just Krishna's pleasure. Right? Because when you're dealing with the advanced levels of devotional service on the Uttama platform, then the first principle is the mood of the Brajavasis. Right? That mood to just please Krishna in pure love. That's common amongst all Brajavasis. The second stage is now, what's specific for you? Mother Yashoda wants to please Krishna through the parental rasa. The cowherd boys through their relationship. The gopis through their relationship. That's secondary. That's the second platform, because that's not the primary. The primary is their love. The secondary is how they express it. Right? That's why the sahajiyas are off, because they take the secondary as the primary. Oh, I'm a gopi in Vrindavan, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. It's all about me doing this and that. Where's Krishna come into it? Oh, I'm doing it all for Krishna. I'm doing it all for Krishna. You understand? This is what's happening. So, pure devotional service means Mother Yashoda loves Krishna. The secondary attribute is that she's doing it through parental rasa. So the primary is her love for Krishna. The secondary is the parental rasa. That's on the highest platform. But we see that this principle applies. That's how you distinguish between sampradayak bhakti and the sahajis, or the impersonals. Right? That's how you also know about caste Goswamis and other things like that. Why they're not, or the smartest. Why they're not considered sampradayak, because they're worshiping Krishna, but their point is, at the end of this worship, is to go to the heavenly planets, or to get liberation. It's not bhakti. So they're only using bhakti to get what they want. Because practically, without bhakti, nothing works. Right? Any person in the world, they're getting any benefit from karma or jnana, it's because of bhakti. It's not very scientific. They don't know. But okay, the businessman, why does he get money? He puts in that effort, that bhakti, into his effort. But as soon as he makes the profit, bhakti's gone, and now he sits back and enjoys, and I'm the doer, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, you know, and then I'm the friend of all living entities, right, because he gives charity. You understand? So nothing goes on without this, because the universal laws is what is functioning in the world. The materialist may not understand this. They may think, no, I'm doing everything the way I like, how I like, and all that. No, they're doing according to the modes. It's just a matter of whether they recognize the supreme in it or not, whether they recognize the Vedic authority or not. But that doesn't make any difference. Yes?
Maharaj, I didn't understand how the businessman puts the bhakti in his activities.
Okay, now he's he makes an investment. He puts so many millions of dollars into something, okay? Now, does he have to control his senses?
Yes.
Okay. Does he have to be acting selflessly here in the moment?
Yes.
You understand? So all those qualities that we use, the secondary qualities, all these nice qualities that are mentioned here, like that. Where is it here? Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, all these tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, they have to use all those. You understand? There's a devotion to the activity. It's not to the Supreme. That's why it doesn't get there. You understand? So, you have those within the Vedic system, they are directing that bhakti towards Vishnu, but for a purpose of going to the heavenly planets or getting liberation. You understand? Well, the devotee, it's only for Krishna's pleasure. So mixed devotional service means we want to please Krishna and we want the material benefit. You understand? Or we want the spiritual benefit. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like this. What would you say about a friend who likes to come over to your house and hang out with you because he likes your house?
Not very personal.
Yeah. So then I'm serving Krishna because I want to get out of the material world, go back to Godhead.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You understand? But it's you're interacting with Krishna. It's based on Krishna. So for Krishna, he has nothing to gain. So because everything is his anyway, so there's nothing to gain. So for him, it's a personal interaction. So there's some personal interaction that's better than none. So he's happy with that. But if it's done because you come to his house because you like him, so whether he's in his house or he's outside or he's, you know, riding on the train, you're happy to be with him. It's not about, I only like to be with you when you're in your house. Does that make sense? Yes.
And just to illustrate this point of mixed personalism and personalism. Many years ago, I got a pamphlet from a religious group. Some person was saved and he took up spiritual life and going back to whatever happened on spiritual life. And, he's getting past the border and there is God sitting. Another seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a body, but it's just a ring. There's black. There's no eyes, no mouth. It's just a ring for a head. You know, so I'm black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and he has worshipped this person to get there. And then it's like he gets the last blessing and says, okay, you can go. So it means into the heavenly garden, so I'm something like that. So it's like something like a door guard.
Yeah.
It's just you have to worship him to get there. And but the face doesn't matter because
mm-hmm.
It's not about that relationship, you know, blank nothing or... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's just about God. So it's basically generic, then it's Brahman, or, okay, he's the controller, he's the judge, he's the authority, he's Paramatma. So within the material world, no one gets beyond Paramatma realization. Bhagavan Bhagavan dealing with, on the platform of Bhagavan, only Vaishnavas deal there. No one else. It just doesn't happen. But because there is the concept that he's a person, therefore they're open to the Vaishnava theology. You know, or that he's the supreme controller, then they're open. So anything's an opening. Even Brahman, it's an opening. Because Krishna's Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. So it's a step, but as you're pointing out, then that's the weakness. It's not personal. That's the thing, ultimately, because it's about them going to the heavenly planets. Why? So they can enjoy. So that means their ultimate point, again, comes back down to Anamoy. Right? But they're willing to follow the rules of Pranamoy, or follow the rules of Manamoy, or even follow the rules of Vigyanamoy to get there, depending upon their nature and that. So they're able to be some austerity in that, or some knowledge, some practice. But their ultimate point is to get to the heavenly planets to enjoy. Because what do you do in the heavenly planets? You hang out with your family, you know, and do that eternally. Okay? Hope everybody likes their family before they go, but otherwise, because you're stuck. You know?
How do you understand, I heard the Prabhupada said that there is this, in this moment who are heading for heavenly planets.
Yes, yes.
And what could be, indication of that?
What's the indication of that?
Yeah, in the community, or even if you want
it's just what...
Can you maintain that if you're really in the Sangha, actively, yeah. And in the proper,
It's basically at the time of death what you're taking shelter of. If you take shelter of Krishna, you go back to Godhead. It doesn't matter what your position. But the problem is if you're cultivating a neophyte mentality your whole devotional career, then there's the possibility that you might not think of Krishna. You might think of some other aspect. So that's why it's not recommended. The Madhyama platform being and Nishtha is the recommended minimum. Is that Bhagavatam's always talking about being stable and steady in devotional service. So that's the recommended minimum. Because the neophyte, because of the Prakriti aspect, neophyte generally means mixed. Right? See, there's a difference though. If someone is very committed but doesn't know the philosophy well or know the Shastra nicely and like that, then they can be third-class pure devotees. Right? You see that Kashi Mishra is a third-class pure devotee. Or Prabhupada was talking about in those early days that all his disciples were pure devotees. Because they didn't know that much about the philosophy. Right? I think in 1970 it was figured out only Satsarup Maharaj, he actually read the books and knew something. Everybody else didn't know anything. Right, so that's when Prabhupada introduced the morning and evening classes. So then, but the commitment was that there. So that's pure devotion, because all they wanted was to please Prabhupada, please Krishna, like that. But when we start adding into it that all these community elements, not from the point of engagement, but from a point of an okay lifestyle. You understand? That's why Adhikar comes into it. When we're dealing with Sambandha, we have Sankarshan and we have Prajumna. So Sankarshan is the elements. Means, in other words, what is the application of the various rules and elements. Like Sankarshan is what is there and what it can do and how it relates to everything else. Right? But when I'm going to apply that, right, into a process, then the qualification comes in. Right? I'm supposed to, okay, the person here is supposed to do this. Okay, the pujari does the arti. Okay. But that's in Sankarshan, but when you're talking about Prajumna, now what's the attitude? What's the maturity? What's the development? So therefore, what are the rights of that individual? But it's based on their qualification, not on their feelings. As we're saying, modernist, I have the feeling, so I have the right. But the Vedic is, it doesn't matter what your feeling is, it's what's your qualification. So that's the difficulty. So prajumna then means is that you have to have the right attitude. Right? So if I'm a community member because I, you know, this is what I can do for Krishna, then that's nice. You could be situated in pure devotion. But if I'm a community member because, you know, the temple stuff, that's fanatic, and I'm just being real, and I'm being realistic, and I'm being practical, and everybody else is off the wall, that's just downright, straight, upfront neophyte. And it doesn't matter how long you've been around. We have to remember, the soul's been in the material world since time immemorial, and the soul's older than that. So, therefore, you know, one lifetime of that, our false ego makes us really big, but that's still a child. Because then it's about me doing what I want, me doing what I want. Because the point is their goal is their independence, and their independence is so they can have their sense gratification. And then Krishna's on the side. Does that make sense? So that mentality, if that's cultivated at the time of death, are you really going to take shelter of Krishna? You might, because the devotees are there doing kirtan, his pictures. So every chance you could, great, and that's perfect. But why risk it? Why risk it that a lifetime of committed mixed devotional service, because it's superior to pure devotional service, and then at the end, then we'll go back to Godhead. So that's what you have to see. That's where it is. In other words, is one performing mixed devotional service, one knows it's mixed devotional service, knows it's not ideal, but it works for right now, but your ideal is pure devotional service. And that's your knowledge, that's your endeavor. That's the person who can go beyond. But the person who's performing mixed devotional service claims that it's as good as anything else, and claims that they're in just as good a situation as everybody else, that's basically a formula for going to the heavenly planets. Right there. Because they are doing devotional service, so they're better than anybody in the universe. So naturally they qualify as a demigod, because that's as good as it gets in the material world. So why wouldn't they become? Right? Well, you know, in other words, next life, next birth, since they're committed to being here is great, naturally they get a better position than just hanging around here. So that's why Krishna in the Gita says the neophyte tends to go to the heavenly planets. The Madhyama then tends to be born into the family of devotees. That's if they don't go back to Godhead. You understand? It means the first option is no matter what your position you think of Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Then that's fine. But if you don't go back to Godhead, the tendency is that neophyte will go to the heavenly planets, the Madhyama will be born in the family of devotees. Right? And then after having gone to the heavenly planets, then that devotee will come back and be born in the family of, you know, wealthy or religious or nobility or things like that. So all the rich people in the city and the powerful people in the city, they were in the heavenly planets. Right? And so they've done some devotional service there, that's why there's that much. So no one's in any good position without devotional service. We're thinking, we're the few little weirdos on the edge here. But actually, the universe is run by God and His rules. So somebody's in this big, wealthy family is because they've done some devotional service. They went to heavenly planets, that's where they come back to. But because the devotional service wasn't their primary effort, that's why it's not in this life. Their primary effort was, you know, to be okay, to be comfortable, to be happy, to be... Does that make sense? So, what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? The devotee comes to the temple once every 3 months, once a year, like that. Now let's just say we increase his bank balance by a few zeros. You know? Then it's the same thing. He'll just be that rich guy who now and again comes to the temple. You understand? Problem is we don't think. Because this kind of stuff gets scary. Yes.
Yeah, this song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is about the Lord Nityananda opens the market for his morning name. And then he said, I will take the service of the sweeper.
Yes. Yes.
So this is kind of what, this is what ISKCON or representative group Prabhupada has to do.
It has to be the sweeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're taking it that we're looking at it that the sweeper, oh, that's not prestigious. Being the manager is prestigious. The sweeper means you're clearing out all the anartas in everyone's heart. So that means the highest people, their prime effort is how to remove the anartas from the hearts of those who are under their charge. So if you're a GBC, a temple president, whatever it is, the main thing you're trying to do is remove the anartas from others' hearts. They're doing the practical service. Just like for the GBC, the presidents do the management. But the point is they can get distracted in the management. So they're there to see that they're performing their service in pure devotion because the president's going to have the most influence on the maximum amount of people. And then the president, he's seeing that all his department heads and all that are doing everything nice and have the right attitude because they're the ones dealing on the day-to-day platform with the devotees. Right? And like this, it just filters down. Does that make sense? The husband sees that the devotional standards are there, devotional consciousness is there, because the wife manages the house. Does that make sense? So that's how leadership works, is that's actually what leadership is for, is following the footsteps of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, being the sweeper. So the manager is not the top of the pile. It is the top of the pile in Japanese culture, in a few cultures. In Japanese culture, the samurai is at the top, then the priests, then the common person, right? The farmer isn't just common person. And on the bottom of the pile are the businessmen, those who do trade, and they're right in the bottom. Right? In Japanese culture, they're considered pond scum, right? They're just like, they're the lowest. Because, you know, they're always tricking and always conniving. Like a farmer goes out, plows a field, it's honest work. But the tradesmen, then they're considered the lowest. But the point is in the top of the culture, they can administrate as the top. Right? Why did Parasaram make his tour? Because this same mentality was there in India. So he kept going until there was no one left with that mentality. Right? Then the Kshatriyas that were born, they were like Brahmins, and they had that spiritual mentality in that. So they would be like Yudhishthira Maharaj. So we always have to be very careful. We can think that, no, because I'm doing it, therefore it's perfect. But we have to follow the injunctions and know what is right and wrong. We have to discriminate. Otherwise, we're going by, I'm doing it, so therefore it's right. What's the difference between that and an animal? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Services very rarely attend.
Yes.
And you have to take it from the Krishna personally or from the pure devotee of Krishna.
Right.
That means this mixed devotional service is generally a common platform which we can do from our own.
Yes.
Then by which way we have to elevate the consciousness, then it depends generally on the Krishna and pure devotee.
Means one has to, in other words, in your surrender to Krishna, your prayers to Krishna, then you have to pray for pure devotional service. Point is it's what you desire is what you get. Does that make sense? You want pure devotional service, you get it. Because that's what Krishna wants. All the residents in the spiritual world, they're all on the platform of pure devotional service. Right? So then, that's what Krishna wants. So if you want it, you'll get it. So by his mercy, by association, by reading the books, you'll see things that you didn't see before, like that. But you have to want it. So that's why, again, it comes back to the prajumna aspect is desire. If the attitude is right, you desire, then things progress nicely. Because as we mentioned, the purusharta is based on this prajumna aspect. You want the ultimate goal, that's based on your mentality. Right? How I deal with Sankarshan, that's going to get me the Kritatva. That's going to get me the secondary goals. Because the secondary goals is what I can see. right? Devotees work very hard, they get the temple. Okay? That's Kritatva. What's the Purusharta? Purusharta is that now we can preach, serve Krishna and things like that. Does that make sense? So the Shankarshan gets you the Kritatva, and the Prajumna gets you the Purusharta. Does that make sense? So mentality is very important. So that's why it's Krishna consciousness, not about, you know, international society for doing all rules and regulations from the Vedic literatures that most people think are archaic, you know, society. You know, that's not the point. The point is the consciousness, because if the consciousness is right, whether the externals are, you know, great or not, it still works. That's the thing. Is that what it is?
And how to be careful about this mentality of that I want something for myself, because it's generally emanating from the passion.
Yes, it's from passion and ignorance.
Yeah, but it's generally common things, because when we are not able to generally make ourselves the pure devotee without the help of the real pure devotees.
But here, these books, these are real pure devotees. You know what I'm saying? The acharyas and their commentaries. That's why when devotees want to mess with the commentaries or don't take them seriously, then they're basically closing the door on pure devotional service. Because what am I doing? I'm adjusting it for me. People will say, no, it's for the preaching. I don't buy it. Point is if someone reads something, the purport that they don't like, now's your opportunity to preach. So if I want it to go without any trouble, then that's the mode of goodness. That's not pure goodness. Mode of goodness is, I follow the rules, I do everything right, I don't want any trouble. It's right there in the third canto. Pure goodness is, I want to serve Krishna, and then whether there's trouble or not, I'm willing to do it. So therefore, saying that, well, for preaching, people read the purports they don't like, we should take things out of the purports, that's at best mode of goodness. But I guarantee you, most people who want it removed, it's ignorance. Just pure, unalloyed ignorance. They can say whatever they want, who cares? It's what the acharyas say. You know, if a million fools say something is right, it's still wrong. And if one realized soul says that this is right, it's correct. So the point is how to get people to appreciate these purports. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So Prabhupada wanted that the books go out and we have follow-up to deal with that. Does that make sense? It's not just we sell books because they make money. It has to be follow-up, so that means preaching. And the point is people are coming from all kinds of backgrounds. And the point is what is popular today, after some time, won't be. You know, it's just like the fashions that are there now, I don't know if I mentioned it here last year or not. The fashions that are here now, like let's say how much a woman can show her chest, right? Now it's being very liberal and all that. But actually, what is allowed now when people are crazy is less than what was allowed before the Victorian age. Right, early 1800s, 1700s, you could go practically topless. You know, but everything else is very covered and everything's very formal. And it was fine. You know what I'm saying? But with the Victorian, then everybody's covered right up to the neck, the nose sticks out, right? And then it goes the other way. So this whole thing of going back and forth, it's just the modes, what's happening now. But people are working on that. This is eternal and this is reality. But what people think today, given, you know, some particular situation or occasion, it'll totally change. So you can't base how we deal with the eternal on the temporary. And if you do, I would say, it is because of lack of having that commitment to preaching in that area. Not in other areas, no, there. But taking the purport and explaining, why not? Because who studies? Who studies the purports? One or two do. But the point is that's where the challenge is. So you take your risk where your nature is. You know what I'm saying? So the Brahminical nature, its risk is in the philosophy. You speak something, someone may appreciate it, so therefore then you have to discuss it, have to apply it. So therefore, these purports are our link to the pure devotee. And you mess with those, you mess with going back to Godhead. Yes.
I've heard some preachers, they kind of qualify the different statements in Srila Prabhupada's books that, like, if there is some mention about the different sizes of the brain between the genders and like that, that this is like secondary, it's not so important, so that can be like, kind of like left out. But then.
And where do you stop?
Yeah.
If you can't tell the difference between primary and secondary, where does it stop? I'll tell you an interesting point. Discussing with, he's the academic that deals with comparative religions. He was telling me, because we were discussing, you know, similar kind of point. He was saying that sometime back, when he was younger, he was traveling, he was in a bookstore, and he saw a book. It was called The Other Bible, right? So being a religious person, he thought, well, what's this? Yeah. He opens the book, because the book was as fat as the present-day Bible.
Yeah.
So what's this other Bible? And so it explained in there that these are all the sections, all the verses and sections and that from the original Bible that were removed because it was seen that this won't work nicely for preaching or this or that. And he said it was as much as what's in the Bible now. Right? Why did they remove, because before we understand at Nicaea, that's when they removed the idea of karma and stuff. Right? Because reincarnation was there. That was the main split in the church. Was that in one of those ecumenical councils, I think it was Nicaea, that you had, Origen. You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
He was the theologian, up to 300 AD. You know, the 200 AD, whatever he was. He was like the authority, the big philosopher in the Christian church. Because at that time, there was no East and West. It was one church, right? So, he was talking about reincarnation, right? So then the problem came is that if there's reincarnation, then it was thought by some priests, people won't take it seriously. Then they'll think, oh, next life I'll get serious. Probably because people were saying that to them. But instead of preaching and all that, they thought, well, the easiest way is to remove reincarnation. But to remove that meant you had to remove Origen as, a saintly person in their life. And doing that, then the East Orthodox accepted it, the West didn't. And then 70 years later, they accepted it. You understand? So in the name of preaching, the Christians have removed half of their Bible. Half. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sure that they're really wondering about Genesis right now. Whether they should even keep that. So the whole point is what is this for preaching? Preach. Get out there. You know what I'm saying? Saying it's secondary. Yes, so explain it. Can you explain primary and secondary? If you can't explain primary and secondary, what's the point? So, we're more smart than Prabhupada? Prabhupada knows what's in his purports. Prabhupada said these are his ecstasies of absorption and the thing. These are what the acharyas are saying. You don't like it. You won't like going back to Godhead because they're going to say the same thing there. Right? You know what I'm saying? So for political correctness, we have to remember the front term on correctness is political. Not spiritual correctness, not Shastra correctness. It's political correctness. That means it's political. It's more than passion. You know what I'm saying? If you think about the basis, there may be reasons to say that. Talk, preach, explain it. And if you don't know, say, I don't know. Then find out. But don't, because I don't know, nobody knows, therefore we should remove it. It's like, where will it stop? You know what I'm saying? Of this point about illicit sex. People won't like that either. Oh, no one's going to like that. One should not waste semen on sexual pleasure, violating the principles of it. Nobody's going to like that. So what are they going to like? You know? You know, before you eat your Mac double cheeseburger, you know, close your eyes for a moment, lower your head, and think how God's so kind that you got this burger. Okay, maybe people will go for that. But at the same time, as in, if I do that, other people will think I'm religious and all that. So it's just like, while you're doing it just on the side moment, then kind of think, oh, this is cool. That's where the bottom line's going to be. So not only are you going to get rid of purports, you're going to get rid of verses, because the gopis say we're less intelligent women. Devahuti says we're less intelligent women. You have to explain what's less intelligent. Because of their conditioning, they take less intelligent to mean stupid, because that is how the Western man likes to look at women, right? You go down to the pub, the man in the pub, how do they like to think of women? Stupid. So where does this mentality that women, that less intelligent means stupid, come from? It comes from the Western brain. It doesn't come from the Vedic. Because women are four times more clever than men. So cleverness means practically implied intelligence. That means women are as practical, four times more intelligent than men. But the point is they're going to apply that wherever they're going to get taste, rasa. And so if it's spiritual, they'll go for it. If it's material, they'll go for it. That's less intelligent.
Can you explain that a little further, please?
What part a little further? You understand, being able to tell the difference between matter and spirit, that's intelligence. Not getting things done. Western man, or not even Western man, Middle Eastern man, all they've met, they like to take that women are incompetent and can't get anything done materially. Women can get things done as much, if not more, than men. It's their place. The material world's their place, not our place. You understand? Street, they expand it. We don't expand it. You know, if it's up to the man, he'll live in a closet. Literally. And he's happy. Right? He's got his stuff, you know, he's got this junk in this corner and that junk in this corner, and everything's fine. It's big enough to lay down and you're happy. Hey, what else do you need? Now, women like a little bit more than the closet. So the material expansion and development, it's just like this. If you took, let's say, a Humvee. You know Humvee?
No.
There's another name for it. Hummer? You know Hummer?
Yeah.
Hummer is a Humvee made for, you know, kind of like regular street use. The Humvee is the military vehicle, right? It goes anywhere, four-wheel drive, every wheel is independent. You know, it can roll over, you can blow it up, it's good, right? You know, it's like the man's car, okay? Okay, so probably something like that, or a pickup truck. You know, an old Dodge pickup truck, you know, everything sits in the back. That's good enough. Men don't need anything more. Right? That there's a Ferrari, that there's a Lamborghini, that there's a Porsche, that there's all these things that look good, they look nice, that's because there's women. You understand? That there's a big fancy house, there's gardens, that's because of the women. Fancy clothes, variety of clothes, that's because there's women. Nice food, varieties of food, restaurants, you know, fancy places, malls. Right? Man can go to the market. Like, have you been in India? You've seen these old markets like Butter Bazaar. It's just there's a shop there, it's got the stuff sitting right there. You want it, you buy it. You don't want it, keep walking. That's a man's market. Woman's market is you walk in, nice big lights, everything's decorated and all this. And you understand? So it's a woman's world, despite the song. Right? Because why are the men working? Because of the women. They're not working because of themselves. They're happy in the closet. Hey, that's good enough. You know, so the woman has to go in there, kick the guy out of the closet and say, go to work. You understand? So, as far as the material world goes, women are way more intelligent. But they're so intelligent that you don't know it. Right? Who's in the newspapers? Right? Celebrities, politicians, and this and that. The big thing, have you ever heard, seen, do you ever notice, is any Rothschild in the newspaper? Rockefeller? You know, any of these families, are they ever in the newspaper?
No.
They're the ones that are making things happen. That's smart. So who's smart? The man's the one out there. He's the woman is not. So who's smart? You understand? So it's the Western man, or the modern man, that thinks women are stupid. So something coming from us, why when we apply our intelligence onto Prabhupada's purports and the Vedic literature, that we make this same mistake, and now it's the fault of the literature? That's cheating. Vedic literature is that less intelligence means not taking the time to tell the difference between matter and spirit. So therefore, if you know, worshiping Krishna is nice, they do that, totally. But if doing something with the family is nice, they do that, totally. So there's no discrimination between it. That's the less intelligent. Not ability. You understand? Yes, no?
Yes.
So, therefore, then why would one want to mess with these things? Point is, if you don't understand them, that doesn't give you the right to remove them. And if you would want to remove anything from the purport, it means you don't understand it. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. It's just bottom line, you do not understand what the Acharya is talking about. That's it. And so why should, due to that lack of understanding, something be removed from the purport? You have to have no vision to think that. And it's not a matter of mass. Because many people think like that, so what? 7 billion people on this planet think sense gratification is the end goal of life. Does that make it right? And what's wrong with being different? In Alexander the Great? Okay, he used to go see Diogenes. Diogenes lived in a barrel. You don't get much weirder than that. He was the emperor of the world, but he goes to see a guy who lives in a barrel. Why? Because he's got something to say. And it's different. They know it's different. In other words, people with intelligence, real intelligence, don't mind that it's different. It's people with so-called intelligence. It means you get a university degree, you think you're intelligent. Then they're the people that actually run the world. They're two different things. So, for this modern so-called educated mentality that they think they are the world, I'm sorry, they're not. And if we're going to change things for that particular demographic, why does that demographic think they're more superior than other demographics? They'll say the world's changing. Yeah, look at the Middle East, what's going on. That's pretty medieval. That's not even, you know, they think we're up to date in 2000. That's medieval. Right? So where's this progress they're talking about? Each individual, it's wherever they choose to be, that's where they are. So the point is do we want to follow the Acharyas, understand and go back to Godhead, or do we want to make a comfortable life here and stay here? Because that option is there. That makes sense. As we pointed out, that option is there. But that option is not there for long, because once you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, everyone will at some point go back to Godhead. It's just a matter of when. Right? And every living entity will come in contact with devotional service, since that's what is going on in the universe. We take it that we're just a little side group. No, the whole universe knows about the Vedic culture and practices it to some degree. So we're the only ones that, you know, have some weird illness. That makes sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah. That answer? Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about trying to get spiritual benefit. And yes. I wonder why it is not pure to try to get spiritual benefit. Does it mean that it's not pure to try to become pure?
Oh, is it pure to... That's a good one. Is it pure to become pure? It's pure to become pure, but then the point is that what's the point of the purity? To become pure is good. Why do you want to be pure?
And I also wonder...
No, do you understand? Why would you want to be pure? But what is it needed for?
Because it says that Krishna lives in a pure heart, not in, he doesn't...
So then the goal would be to have a pure heart, or the goal would be to have Krishna living in the heart?
Krishna.
Yeah, you understand? So all it is just shifting the focus. See, you can't separate the two, but you have to know what the primary is. Just like this. Okay. What's more important, cooking or the kitchen?
Cooking.
Okay. But can you cook without a kitchen?
Outside.
But still, you're going to set up a kitchen. You're going to get a couple of bricks and, you know,
yes.
You know, one of those old, you know, what do you mean, tomato sauce cans and, get a stick, go for it, You understand? So you create, so in other words, cooking is expressed through the kitchen. But the purpose of the kitchen is cooking. So now, the cooking is the primary, the kitchen is the secondary. So you have to have both, but you have to know what's primary and secondary. So going back to Godhead and all that is, you know, how one's going to serve Krishna in that capacity. But it's secondary to the service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. So now the problem comes is that, so that means Krishna is the primary, his energy is the secondary. Because how do you express Krishna's position except through his energy? Right? How do you know Krishna is Krishna except through his energy? Right? Like it says, Krishna is manifest through his internal potency. Right? When we always read, it's always Krishna through his internal potency is manifested, right, as opposed to external potency. Right? Like our body is manifest by external potency. Krishna's body is manifest by internal potency. The internal potency is non-different than him, but it still is potency. So how do we appreciate Krishna? Through his energy. How do we know Braja Krishna? Right? Because there's Radharani. How do we know Dwarkadish? Because of Rukmini. How do we know Vaikunthapati? Because of Lakshmi. You understand? So the problem comes is that how we came into the material world is because we've made this mistake. It's about the energy rather than the energetic. So being in the spiritual world, you see the energy around you and think, this is nice, I can be happy with this. When the spiritual energy is the medium to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. So we've taken the energy on itself. So if you're only going to look at energy and not energetic, in the spiritual world that won't be appreciated because that's everybody thinks about Krishna. But in the material world, then it's all about energy and not the energetic. Here it's about the energy and controlling it. It's not about Krishna. That's why we take these secondary points as very important, because that's how we're conditioned, that we think the secondary is the primary. And yeah, of course it's for Krishna. You know, what about for, yeah, of course it's for Krishna. Now let's get back down to the reality, the substance. No, it's Krishna is the substance. Because as we can see with you pointing out, leadership means to be able to explain this. See that everybody understands the primary and is using the secondary to the best of their ability and according to their ability. You understand? So, if I'm taking primaries to go back to Godhead, that means I'm going to be engaged, I'm going to engage body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, right, as a means. Okay? Now, how do I know how to best engage the body, mind, and words? So then that's defined by the scriptures, and defined by the Vedic structure. I know I have this body, it does this service. I have this kind of mind, it does this. This kind of intelligence, it can do this. And so then that whole point is, therefore, Varnashram is to engage my conditioning in the Lord's service. Because the Lord's service is actually the ultimate point. And since it's that, therefore Varnashram is important. Now if I'm just taking getting something done, then I don't know Varnashram, and it has so many rules and regulations, it takes so much contemplation to understand, so I'm just going to do what I know best. You understand? Therefore, Varnashram gets pushed aside because it's getting something done. It's not about the service to Krishna. So the getting done becomes the primary, though it's service to Krishna. You understand? Managing means you're doing something for Krishna. But if it's about the management, not about pleasing Krishna, of course we'll say ultimately it is, but that's not what's prominent in the mind. The intent is just getting this done. So that's why then it shifts the whole mentality. And that's why then for the Western mentality, Varnashram doesn't make sense, because it's a culture that's higher. It's based on goodness, not passion and ignorance. So I know how to manage through passion and ignorance. Like we were discussing yesterday, a very common thing is that do this, why should I just surrender, Prabhu? You know? Krishna says in the Gita, just surrender. Okay, so, but what does surrender mean? How to surrender? Is that ever explained? No, it's just surrender. So is it a matter of philosophy, or is it a matter of management? So I'm saying surrender because I want you to do what I told you to. So it's management. It's a management technique. So in other words, it's artha, because I'm not actually explaining dharma. Because whether you should be doing this or whether I should be telling you to do that, that's not the consideration. It's that this will get the profit, so it's artha, at best. Most of the time it's just niti, because much of the time do this and then we find out, you know, a few days later, a few weeks, a few months later that something goes wrong. Because I'm not seeing a bigger picture, I'm just seeing immediate. Does that make sense? Yeah, so one has to understand what one's doing. It's only broad, and one can say, well, Prabhupada didn't say it. Prabhupada, it's right here in the purports. We're talking about it from here. So that's not a point. Point is, it's when you have a bunch of nursery kids, you know, you don't talk quantum physics. But after 40 years, you expect you can talk some quantum physics. You know what I'm saying? We can't claim 1960s, you know, Hardy Bowl mentality. And at the same time, as we have seminars on how to be materially very successful. The point is how sophisticated you're making your secondary aspects, your primary should be that sophisticated. So otherwise it's out of balance. I simply cultivate the secondary and don't cultivate the primary. That's not balanced. And then we're talking about balance and this and that. You know, holistic means primary and secondary. Primary is the main. Like someone's just developing a nice kitchen and never cooks. After a while you say, what's this for? Because it doesn't do anything. Right? In other words, the secondary only accomplishes something when there's a primary. Right? The kitchen accomplishes something when there's cooking. Otherwise, just going out and buying more kitchen stuff, it's not really an activity. Because there's no goal being made. Because the secondary always has to be in connection with the primary. Okay. Is that funny because of the kitchen or funny because you know someone who does that? Okay. Onion? Well, maybe. But he does cook. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what we're meaning there, is then you have to know how to connect those elements. So that when that's there, see, because in other words, if the primary is always there, so the tendency is, the feminine nature is the secondary aspect personified. So the tendency is going to be to work with that. But the point is the feminine nature cannot be satisfied unless there's the balance that is connected with the primary. Right? So simply just connecting it with the mundane masculine is going to satisfy the conditioning, but not satisfy the soul. You understand? So unless it's connected to the primary meaning Krishna, then only the soul will be satisfied. But because we're working on the energy part, we're looking at energy as generic. So we're not really worried about internal, external, or jiva. We're just worried about it secondary. So as long as secondary is developing, things are going well. Does that make sense? So that's where the less intelligent part comes. When you discriminate that, yes, have to connect to the masculine aspect, that masculine means Krishna, that's intelligent. But if we don't take it that far and only connect to the masculine meaning of this world, then that's less intelligent. But it's more intelligent than not connecting at all. Right? It means I'll be the man. Okay, great. You know, you go out, you get the job, you have the big fancy apartment, and when you come home, then you expect someone's going to cook for you. But who's there to cook for you? Right? Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that work? Does that work? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to, in some sources, like how to realize the material benefits coming from devotional service, I'll make it like a more strongly emphasized.
No, it's just there's, you're dealing with every action gets a result. And there's going to be the spiritual result, there's going to be on the spiritual platform, there's going to be on the intellectual, on the emotional, on the physical. All those results are there. So then the point is then figuring out what is that. That then is what you have to do. Right? So, because you're dealing with the volume, it's going to explain all that also. Does that make sense? It will explain all that also. So just because there's more volume doesn't mean it's more important. Right, just like, let's say, chanting your japa. Okay, and let's say that's 2 hours a day. What's the other 22 hours? So that's greater by volume, not importance. Right? Plus, a lot of people do things because of the benefit they get. You know? It's like what you said, I thought it's not important. When I was putting together the deity worship book, when it came to the benefits that you get from taking the morning bath that's not hot, it's cold. You know, it increases the intelligence, the focus, it clears the subtle body, it purifies the gross body. Those were all left in. There's one there that makes you attracted to the opposite sex. So I thought, well, who's going to care about that? Because this was back in the 80s. So then we dropped that one. But nowadays, probably a lot of people would take more seriously the morning bath if they thought it made me look better to the opposite sex. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you're following, means these are the natural forms of human life. You follow them, you get benefit. Right? You follow them, you get benefit. So now, it's just a matter of how, by your beginning motive. But by associating, then you get purified, and then you give up doing it for the lower motives and start doing it for the higher motives. Right? So I'll start off, okay, I'm doing this because it makes me look good for the girls. Okay, I'm taking the morning bath to, it purifies, you know, the grossest of the body, so then I'm feeling more in goodness. So then it's actually, because then I'm clean in that, so I can go to the temple and see Krishna. You understand? So it'll progress through that as you get purified. But what's important, as Prabhu pointed out, is the association. You have to have association, otherwise the tendency is you won't progress through there. It'll be very strong. So I said. Yeah. How are we doing now? Text 14. For a Brahmana, there are 6 occupational duties. A Kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other 5 of these duties. A king or Kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on Brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, custom duties, and penalty fines upon his other subjects. Right, so it's distinguishing here then. So, okay, purport. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains the position of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas as follows. Brahmanas have 6 occupational duties, of which 3 are compulsory, namely studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving in charity. By teaching, by inducing others to worship the deity, by accepting gifts, the Brahmana receives the necessities of life. Right? So 3 you have to do. That is your ashram, your duties. The other 3, then those are, occupation. As such, right? I should study the shastras. Now, whether I teach or not, that's another thing. I should perform worship. Whether I do worship for others is another thing. I should give in charity. Now, whether I accept charity or not, right? So, kshatriyas, 3 of these for the Brahmin, kshatriyas, and vaishyas. Then these 3 are all obligatory. Everybody should do that, right? But especially the Brahmin should do that. Right, so everybody should study, everybody should worship the Lord, and everybody should give in charity. Right? Now, generally only the Brahmins will teach others, do puja for others, and accept charity. But if need be, a Kshatriya, in times of need, can teach others and can do puja for others, but he doesn't accept charity. Right? That's the point that's being made. This is confirmed in the Mano Samhita. Samnam tu karmanam asya trini karmani jivika yajana jyapane chaiva vishudhaccha pratigraha. Of the 6 occupational duties of the Brahmanas, 3 are compulsory, namely worship of the deity, study of the Vedas, and giving of charity. In exchange, a Brahman should receive charity, and this should be his means of livelihood. A Brahmana cannot take up any professional occupational duty for his livelihood. The Shastras especially stress that if one claims to be a Brahmana, he cannot engage in the service of anyone else. So here, technically, professional means you're working for someone else. So technically, being a doctor, you know, a lawyer, means you have your own firm, your own things like this, a teacher. Those are brahminical, they're not professional. Nowadays, they get lumped in because the modern thing is make everybody shudras. Right? Business community, that's what they want. If everybody's working for them, it's good. All the Brahmins, all the Kshatriyas, everybody else is working for them, great. But in the Vedic system, no. It's not like that. So professional means Shudra. Right? You're one who works for someone, you have a particular skill, you're specialized in that. Right? It's not just common labor, but it's a specialized skill that you've been educated in. That's a profession. that make sense? So yeah. Otherwise, if one falls from his position, becomes a Shudra. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami belonged to a very respectful family. But because they engaged in the service of Nawab Hussain Shah,